All right, good morning, everybody. Today is Monday, April 4th, 2016. And this is Before the First Cup with Jules here on UCY.TV. Happy Monday, everybody. It is 26 degrees with light snow, fog, mist here in upstate New York. Yeah, it looks like we got a good 5 or 6 inches last night. I think we're out of the woods as far as the snow goes, at least for the extended week. Looks like we might hit a low of 19 tonight, but then it's going to be rain and kind of mild after that. So hopefully all the flowers and the trees will survive. And spring will sprung here because I'm about done with winter. Where do we leave off on Friday? We titled the show Augmented Reality, Obsolete Humans, and Evolution of Destruction. And I want to thank whoever shared the show on Friday, because somehow, amazingly, we managed to get over 300 views on the show Friday, which, I don't know, anyone who's done a show knows that it's really difficult to do a show every day, especially 5 days a week, and on top of that, then run a network with 30-plus shows. And so any little bit of encouragement that gives you a little pat on the back to make you feel like you want to keep going always helps. And you know, a couple views always makes you feel a little bit better, at least like people are listening. So thank you to whoever did that. I really appreciate it. You made my weekend. We talked about a lot of things on Friday and just the whole degeneration of the society and how we are selling out to the machine, how they are using that dopamine carrot to suck us in, and virtual reality seems to be one of the next pieces to this, right? VR Pornhub is all going to be free, and we got goggles shipping from Oculus, a.k.a. Facebook, as well as Microsoft, and they're just touting how amazing these are, and this is going to be the future of everything. Suck you right in. It's going to be so incredible, graphics, and you won't even be able to tell the difference between that and reality. And hey, Johnny, anytime you feel sad, just put on those goggles. We can attend business meetings or play video games or see Nana at Christmas time while she is on the other side of the planet. I mean, I got to admit that they're cool. I'm not going to say that the VR, whether it be augmented, whatever they were calling them, augmented reality versus virtual reality, they both are pretty cool. Augmented reality allows that to actually superimpose the display screen over your environment, where virtual reality physically puts you in a different place. And like I was saying on Friday, I think from a business perspective and usefulness, augmented reality actually will probably catch on in the business space. I could see, you know, having worked remotely for 13 years with people from all over the country. And before that, I mean, I was training 1,700 people and they were all in different locations. It's one thing to be able to talk and have people hear you. It's another thing to literally feel like you're sitting in the same room with somebody having a discussion long distance. And that's why I think it's going to take off, especially in the collaboration space. But the scary fact of the matter is, you know, you put these things on and it's just the next baby step to being pulled in to where they have control of everything. And we're going to look at some of these other facets. A few days ago, they wheeled out good old Ray Kurzweil. Again, anytime they have a new bit of the agenda to push, they roll out Ray and put him on an interview and get him to talk about how amazing technology is and all the great things. Look it, I'm not scary, except that I know better because you are scary, Ray. You know, you're the man of my nightmares, and you got a smile, and you look all innocuous, and even got your Grecian formula now, so you're looking younger. But Ray Kurzweil is not innocuous. Ray Kurzweil is the director of engineering for Google's artificial intelligence division. Ray Kurzweil is the father to many technologies that we take for granted today, and he has been a futurist for many years. A smart guy at that, who's been able to make some of his visions reality. And this has been, to merge with the machine, has been Ray's dream since he was young. His dad died. I don't know. The whole story behind it is bizarre. I've mentioned that before, but he wants to be able to bring his dad back. And that's why when he talks about uploading and downloading yourself to the cloud and all that, that's what this is all about. I mean, I'm sure this isn't all that it's about, but it's kind of what sparked his interest in all of this and kind of made him obsessive compulsive over merging with the machine, because that's what he is. And this man is going to make it happen. DARPA and Google said, hey, look, we got a lunatic that's smart enough to actually figure out what's going on. Let's give him an unlimited budget in a company that is very innovative, and let's see what happens. And, you know, he's only been there for a couple of years. And all of these things, all of our nightmares that we've talked about in these last few years since Ray has had unlimited resources and connections to all these great minds that he's able to bring in and, again, tempt with the dangling carrot this time. It's being able to cure disease, cure death like a disease, cure cancer, make you younger, longevity. Look at how amazing. Let's upload ourselves. Let's build this artificial brain that then we can merge with. I mean, it sounds insane. We've talked about it enough times, but Ray is the one. Ray is the human face to all of this. And because of that, I think we're all hooked up here. Because of that, let's start off. We're going to listen to the PBS. It's just a few little minutes, but we heard this the other day and it was the end of the show. Let's kick it off with this. Inventor Ray Kurzweil sees immortality in our future, and we're going to go from here.
And now to another in our brief but spectacular
series. Yeah, hold on. In our brief but spectacular, very, very, very quiet video. All right. Here we go.
And now to another in our brief but spectacular series. Tonight we hear from inventor and futurist Ray Kurzweil about immortality and the exponential growth of technology. Since 2012, Kurzweil has been a director of engineering at Google.
Our immediate reaction to death is that it's a tragedy, and that's really the correct reaction. We've rationalized it, saying, oh, that tragic thing that's looming, that's actually a good thing. But now we can actually seriously talk about a scenario where we will be able to extend our longevity indefinitely.
So he makes... I get this echo now, and usually it's not with this machine. He makes us think that death is a bad thing, and nobody wants to die. But on the other hand, like I've pointed out many times before, there is such a thing as analog life versus digital life. They're talking about making us into digital life. In analog life, you have cycles. We have spring, which is birth, summer, which is growth, fall, which is aging, and winter, which is death. Now, take it from somebody who got an English degree and had to read many, many, many literary works and look for themes. Yes, the four seasons of nature and the cycle of birth, life, and death are very prevalent throughout history in man's writings. And you know why? Because that's the natural order of things. You grow, you birth, you nurture to bring up the next generation, and then you proudly go back to the repository, whether it be, and you know, the greatest thing is what I always thought was cool when I was a kid, kind of learning about the cycle of life. And it's not just us that have the cycle of life. It's every living creature on this planet, is that we're naturally recycled. All of our elements that are inside of us not only naturally recycle in the soil and feed new life, which is a really wonderful thing, but we are actually stardust from the original elements that were in the universe. Wasn't that Carl Sagan who talks about we're all stardust? Because we are all stardust. We are made up of elements that were created when the universe was created, or, you know, whatever. I mean, we're talking like time frames of bazillions of years. How incredible is it that there's just these few elements floating around out there, and I don't know even what we're up to. I think now with some of the artificial man-made ones that just came out of Japan, I think we're up to 226, but still, even if we just looked at, and don't ask me, it's been a long time since I took chemistry, but, you know, if you look at the first 100 or so naturally occurring elements, and then look at how amazing it is that all life, even all planets, all matter, everything was created with those few elements. They mixed and matched over eons, and some amazing things have come out of those elements. One of those things being life. One of those things being humans. One of those things being a populated planet with an ecosystem that everything just so perfectly meshes and works together in layers of cooperation. Self-managing. You know what happens when you have overpopulation? You don't have to send out hunters to go kill an allotment of deer so they don't starve. They just starve. Next year, there'll be less. And then if you have a year of more abundance, hey, there'll be more the year after. It's self-regulating. We don't need somebody to control nature and life at the cellular level. And that is what people like Ray Kurzweil are planning on. Not only do they want to control life, stop death, stop the cycle of recycling, because, see, we have to be recycled. For there to be future life, the elements, the space, the time that we take up on this planet needs to be opened up for the next generation. And Kurzweil wants to stop that. He wants to prevent the next generation. Or if there is a next generation, he wants to genetically engineer it and make it perfect, quote unquote. Because nature, even though nature has been creating and evolving for eons on end, apparently nature isn't perfect. Though we mimic and copy nature to create these synthetic aberrations that they're working on in the lab. You know, Friday we looked at the DIY cut and CRISPR synthetic biology in your parents' garage in Long Island. I mean, can you freaking believe that it's gotten to that point? We might actually get back into some of that today. I don't know, though. I'm going to look at some of the science stuff and some of the sick shit they're doing with the body and the cells. I mean, this stuff, guys, we've crossed a line. And there was a story we were reading on Friday that says we've now crossed a line of no return. And it was a story about the tech titans, people like me. I'm not a titan, but I'm a techie and have been for many, many years. I lived, ate, and breathed this stuff. I evangelize technology is saving the future. And there are many people like me who are now looking at the stuff going, wait a second, this isn't what we signed up for. We didn't sign up for lunatics with smiles saying, okay, Johnny, this isn't going to hurt one bit. And it's for your own good. Forcing these nanobots into our bodies, or forcing genetically modified X, Y, and Z on our children, forcing animal proteins into your baby. I mean, if you guys listened to the show last Sunday with Clint Richardson and Patrick Jordan in Shally's slot, they were sitting in on Sunday, Cool Reality Radio, guest host Clint Richardson and guest Patrick Jordan, and they talked about prions. We've done a lot on prions. I've actually been looking into the whole prion disease, man-cow disease, how it all works and affects your brain since they first found it in the 90s, because I never trusted Bush and his buddies, the cattle ranchers that, you know, had so much invested and them making sure that they did not find any more mad cow ever. You know, they really started to dig into that prion disease and how all these different things connect. And in the end, of course, it's not good for you, me, or the kids, or the environment. We are the guinea pigs. We are now seeing some of the fruits of their mad science gone mad labor back in the 90s. Here we are 20 plus years later. And they're going, oh, look at just how many Alzheimer's we have. And look, oh, we think Alzheimer's is contagious. We think you can get it from blood transfusions and dental works. Oh, we're sorry. We didn't know that. And it just, to me, it almost seems like they have created some of these insane diseases and never before seen all over the place because they're hoping at some point that they'll be able to quote unquote cure some of this stuff, solve some of the mysteries with mad science gone mad. And it's almost like the ticking time bomb clock from a psychopath where they decide that you better figure out, Johnny, how to disarm this bomb because we've already turned it on. It's ticking, tick, tick, tick. And if you don't, then bang, we'll all go boom together. You know, they've done that on planet Earth. I just saw a story not too long ago where Stephen Hawking is warning, we better slow the truck down, Chuck. Like I've said many times before, I personally said back it up, but Hawking's saying you better slow it down with all the synthetic biology and crap that you're doing because it's still probably going to be another 100 years before you get your ass off this rock, elite. And so if you don't want to go down with the ship, elite, then you better make sure you don't contaminate things, our biological life, to the point of no return before you get out of here. And that's what they're doing. Biological life is going to be wiped out. The machine not only wants to experiment, but it wants to take it all over. Synthetic biology has gotten to a point where it's boop, 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 push buttons, and you're creating not only new life forms that are chimeras of all different genomes across the board, mixing and matching human and animal and insect and who the hell knows what. Synthetic made up all by yourself, never before seen on planet Earth. But they want to put this crap into us. They want to release this crap into the environment too. Oh, I don't know. Fix oil spills. Fix natural disasters that, you know, they said they had no way to fix before. It's just utter, absolute, utter insanity. So, all right, let's listen to the rest of Ray, because then I have all kinds of stories we're going to hit today. So Ray says, oh, it's so wonderful. We're going to cure death because death is so evil. And oh, it just robs us. It robs us of life. And, you know, like I said, nobody wants to die. And it does seem like a shame that at 80 years old, after all that experience, I mean, how dumb were we at 18 compared to when we're 60? Everyone always says, I wish I would have known what I know now back then. And that's true. And when you're gone, you know, that's why you always sit down and have a conversation with your grandparents. But on the other hand, if you live to be 1,000 years old and you never died, we're going to have like this ruling elite of blood-sucking vampires that just never die. I don't see how that is a utopian future. Don't you think you'd get bored? I mean, Ray Kurzweil seems to think we're going to be fed grapes by robots so we could sit around and hypothesize and philosophical things, music and arts. And, you know, it's just going to be so wonderful to not have any jobs because the robots will be doing them all and we can live forever. But that sounds to me like a prison. Because you won't be able to do anything on your own. You won't be able to get into a car and do 90. Not that I'm advocating that, but turn up the music, open the roof, put the pedal to the metal. Those are one of those thrills, those human thrills. Climb a mountain. You know what? We won't be able to climb any mountains because it'll be so damn polluted. All the mountains will be, I don't know, they might be looking for oil. They might be all fenced off because Agenda 21, we got to protect the environment. Go into your holodeck where it's safer and you're not going to affect anything. I mean, this future that we are looking at is beyond anything that I ever had nightmares about. They've even thought of things. I mean, my brain goes at 10,000 miles a minute at times, and it thinks up all these different horrifying things when I start thinking about a certain scenario. And they've come up with things that I've never even thought of. Ray was one of them. All right, here, let's hear a little bit more. It's music.
I decided to become an inventor when I was 5, bring back broken bicycles and radios. This was an era where you would allow a 5-year-old to roam through the neighborhood and do this. And I had this idea, if I could just figure out how to put all these things together, I could solve any problem. So I wrote a program that could recognize the patterns in melodies from famous composers and write original music. So I went on this show, I've Got a Secret, hosted by Steve Allen.
My name is Raymond Kurzweil, and I'm from Queens, New York.
Queens, New York.
And my secret was I'd built and programmed a computer that composed the music. I created a program that could recognize printed letters in any type font and create a reading machine for the blind. Probably the most important theme I've talked about is the exponential growth of information technology, price, performance, and capacity of information technology.
This is this exponential growth of information technology that we have talked about. And, you know, Ray's talked about that a lot. And he called that a long time ago, how when we are using technology to create technology, it's not just going to be a 1-2 anymore. You know, we improve upon something and then the next generation improves upon something and it slowly and incrementally gets better. But now we have technology that we are building that is super smart. And that super smart technology is now creating more super smart technology that is exponentially smarter than the last generation. And so instead of having a nice smooth rising curve, we have this very sharply upsloping curve of innovation that is occurring. So they've sold it to us that it's going to be 100 years. Don't worry about it, but it's not. It's coming in the next 5 years. They've now warned, you know, they've said, oh, 5, 10, 20, 30 years. Don't worry about it before the robots take everybody's jobs. And we've seen, I mean, I just started doing a show in 2011. So we're talking 5 years later from when I first came on the air talking about drones and nanotechnology. And we're at the point where they're getting ready to unleash the amazing cancer cures. I told you it would be about the cure for cancer. The amazing cancer cures to get the nanobots in your blood. Things that Kurzweil prophesized, hoped, dreamed, and now they are for real. Of course, Google is one of those companies that is working on the development of nanobots in your blood to be your robot doctor. Make sure it can cure you of any future disease so you could live forever.
Progresses predictably and exponentially. It doubles every period of time. So this little computer is actually billions of times more powerful per dollar than the computer I used when I was an undergraduate. We'll do that again the next 25 years. We'll have computers the size of blood cells, little robotic devices that can go through our bloodstream. Its capability thousands or millions fold by connecting to the cloud. That's a 2030 scenario. We've been expanding our life expectancy for thousands of years. It was 19 and 1,000 years ago. It's 37 and 1,800. We're going to get to a point 10, 15 years from now where we're adding more time than is going by to our remaining life expectancy. People,
I need to stop for a second. You know, do you realize, too, he says connecting your brain to the internet, and we read some stuff from him last week or the week before. He's talked about this quite a number of times. That's how we're going to connect our brain to the internet, be able to upload ourselves to the cloud, do this swarm learning like we looked at with Baxter, like the Borg, you know. We're all connected via hive minds, And there'll be this large repository of data, of facts, of things to learn. Kind of like reminds me of Google's truth algorithm and the knowledge vault, guys. That could be the beginnings of all this. And maybe part of that plan. And Kurzweil's talked about, you know, hey, by 2030, we're going to have our brains connected to the internet by nanobots. Well, do you literally realize that 2030 is less than 15 years from now? It's 14 to be exact. And how fast does 14 years go? Poof, it's gone. I don't want my brain connected to the cloud. I like my knowledge level. And if I want to learn, my eyes work just fine to read. My brain works just fine to search. Come up with my own conclusions without being a part of a hive mind. And guys, before I had a child, it was very different. You know, someone was asking me about this the other day. You know, transhumanists and techs, people who are into technology, especially people who were like me, who was single to 35, lived, ate, and breathed this stuff, you know, really was into technology. This is what I did. And I really, you know, looked at the world and said, stuff is really messed up. I don't know. I don't know if I want to reproduce. You know, and that went like that until I was almost 40. And then I'm like, wait a second. If I don't reproduce, who am I going to leave my mountain of shit to? You know, but then you start to really look at life differently as you start to cross that line of aging. You really want to leave a mark. You really want to be able to leave somebody here. But once you have a kid, that embracing of the machine, that being selfish, that being egocentric, that being the narcissist that it's taught us to be, technology, for it all being about you, that veil starts to drop and you start to have to think about somebody else. And you have to, that mama bear instinct comes out and your claws and fangs come out trying to protect that child as you start to dig into the chemicals and all the crap that they're pumping into your kid. And that's when you start to realize that it's all a big fabrication and that it's all a Pied Piper down the yellow brick road to the man behind the curtain. It's all it is. There's no benefit in the end to traditional man, to human 1.0. I don't want to be 2.0. You know, here's my personal thought. If you want to be a transhumanist and you want to merge with the machine, they are working on now this get off of Mother Earth rock project. I don't know. It's called the 100-year Earth project or 100 years something to get off of Earth. Okay. And in order to do that, they're going to have some sort of hybrids for long-term space travel. I've been reading, actually, lately, there's been a lot of space stories, and one of these days we'll do a space show, because I got like 6 or 7 of them lined up, of some of these new technologies they're working on, and some of the things they're talking about. They finally said moon base by 2020 for $10 billion, which I think is still, there's a lot of bullshit going on there. But you want to be a transhumanist? Go get on the ship. I have no argument with that. See ya. Become 2.0. Come back and visit us here in a couple eons and we'll see how differently we evolved. But I think that they should leave the Luddites, those of us who don't want implants, those of us who don't want animal proteins injected into our children, those of us who don't want to eat the synthetic food that they're pumping out and not labeling, or the pesticides or any of the other shit, just leave us alone. You know, I'd like to do it the old-fashioned way, and that is using my own faculties to navigate life. I don't need a self-driving car, thank you very much. I enjoy driving, and I do okay driving between those two yellow lines. I don't need a computer to think for me to do that. All right, Ray, let's finish this one up. I got to get moving on to the next thing.
Say, oh, I don't want to live past 90, but, you know, I talk to 90-year-olds, and they definitely want to live to 91 and to 100. People sometimes say that death gives meaning to life because it makes time short, but actually death is a great robber of meaning, of relationships, of knowledge. We're going to be able to overcome disease and aging. Most of our thinking will be non-biological. That'll be backed up. So if part of it gets wiped away, you can recreate it.
Most of our thinking will be non-biological, just like I said. They are taking us to the synthetic. I mean, honestly, it would be kind of cool, you know, because I am still a sci-fi buff. It would be kind of cool to be able to, like, back yourself up. But the people who are flipping the switches are not honest, good people. They're lunatics. The people who are in control of the data that gets stored, saved, and uploaded are going to do nefarious things with that data. It's not all for your benefit. None of it's ever been for your benefit. So, sorry, I'm not giving it up. You're not getting my memories.
And we'll be able to extend our lives indefinitely. I'd rather use that word than forever. My name is Ray Kurzweil, and this is my brief but spectacular take on our exponential future.
Yes. You can watch more brief but spectacular episodes on our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/newshour.
All right. So, Ray, spectacular. They wheeled him out to sell the future. It's kind of like good old Walt Disney. Didn't they do that? Wernher von Braun went to go work for Disney, part of the military-industrial complex. I hope you guys heard Jay Dyer's show last night with Jamie Crenshaw, I think is her last name. It was one of the esoteric Hollywood episodes that Jay does. But they were looking in general at history and how things have kind of transpired. And that Jamie made some amazing connections between the military-industrial complex and talked about some of the things that Disney was involved in and how they used Disney to spin it to the masses through mass media. And I've talked about that a lot of times. And it was a really, really good show. So if you missed that, I think I put a link to that in the UCY feed last night, so you could hit that on the UCY.tv/news, or it will show up also in the Twitter, twitter.com/UCYTV. You'll see that in there. We looked at a story on Friday, so to kind of piggyback on what Kurzweil is saying, I looked at a story on Friday out of sciencealert.com called "Study Suggests That the Internet Could Really Out-Evolve Humanity." And one of the things that they pointed out in here, and we've seen this all throughout the history of man, we've also had scientists such as Stephen Hawking ponder this: if we ever encountered some sort of superior life form coming from space, what they point out in this article is that at least anthropologically speaking, if that's how you'd put it, I don't know. At least throughout history, when you have a more advanced race encounter a less advanced race, let's just think about the explorers. Let's think about the Spanish coming over to North America or the settlers or whatever. What happens? Oh, whoops. We accidentally killed them all. Oh, no. We've enslaved them all. Because we're superior. That's what we do. If we had some superior race show up here on Earth, well, they think they'd be benevolent. Well, you got scientists like Hawking saying we should go get that Voyager. It was Voyager, Viking, Voyager, I think, probe that's had the record album on it, the gold album, that gave a map to Earth with diagrams and our double helix showing them who we are, where we are, and saying, come visit us. You know, there are scientists out there who think we should go get that and bring it back as it's leaving our solar system. Because it might not turn out so well for us in the future if a more advanced race showed up. Well, the story we looked at on Friday, it talked about that same concept. Superior, quote-unquote, life forms encountering man. Except the superior life form in this instance was artificial technologies artificial intelligence technologies, robots, computers, becoming our overlords. We've had Stephen Hawking, Elon Musk, even Bill Gates come out, the Apple guy too, come out and say, hey, you know, this might not be such a good thing for human beings to be making some sort of intelligence that's way smarter than us and then thinking that we are going to be the rulers, because it's not going to work out that way. You know, they even, there was a story that came out a couple days back out of phys.org where they are now postulating that they might have a laser cloaking device to help hide Earth from aliens. They did. They really did. It says several prominent scientists, including Stephen Hawking, have cautioned against humanity broadcasting our presence to intelligent life on other planets. Other civilizations might try to find Earth-like planets using the same techniques we do, including looking for a dip in light when the planet moves directly in front of the star it orbits. And when they come here, they might be looking for Earth's resources, and other than being benign, they could devastate Earth, just like the first Europeans traveling to the Americas. Ding, ding. That's just how it happens. All throughout biology, they pointed out in that story from Friday how RNA was then replaced by DNA. And as things become obsolete, they get replaced by something better. We don't want to be replaced, and that is about what is happening. I tried to get to the story for 2 days now, so we're going to look at this now. Ran across a story out of TechCrunch, March 29th, and it was written by Zoltan Istvan. If anyone knows who Zoltan Istvan is, you will appreciate this. Zoltan Istvan actually was a guest here on Michael Cross's Unlock the Door one time. I've aired that episode a few times. He is like a main transhumanist dude. He is the 2016 U.S. presidential candidate of the Transhumanist Party. And he is all about merging with the machine. But even Zoltan Istvan is questioning whether or not the way our society is shaped right now will survive the robot revolution. You know, we've talked about robots taking all of our jobs and this universal basic income and how amazing it's going to be to have all this free money raining from the sky. None of us will have to work anymore, and they're going to cure all disease. And it's going to be just this wonderful world for all of us to live in. We know it's not going to work out that way. Okay, that's how they're selling it to us. But in the end, there's going to be, you know, party, all kinds of streamers and confetti falling down until, ho-ho, they get everyone in the room and those big steel doors locked behind you. And all of a sudden, the lights are going to go out. And then you're going to hear the weird guttural sounds from around the perimeter of the room. As whatever creatures start surrounding us and looking at their prey. Guys, this isn't going to be a good thing. Don't fall for the honeypot traps that they're putting in your face right now. We talked about the honeypots last week, the AI, the VR, the universal basic income, the sex bots. Living forever. They're putting all stops out now to get you to buy in, and anybody who speaks out against what they're trying to push for the formal agenda has something wrong upstairs, is a lunatic of some kind. How could you not want this amazing future? And we're offering it all to you for free. Not going to cost you anything. Remember, there's no free lunch, people. None, ever. All right, Zoltan Istvan. Will capitalism survive the robot revolution? Well, economic experts are trying to figure out. A question of that just 2 decades ago seemed ridiculous. If 90% of all human jobs are replaced by robots in the next 50 years. So look at guys. So every time we read a story, that number goes up. So now we're talking, first it was 50% of all jobs in the next 20 years or 30 years, then it was 50% of all jobs in the next 10. Then I saw by 2020, which is 4 years from now, And now we're talking 90% of all jobs in the next 50 years gone. Something that is now being considered very plausible is capitalism still the ideal economic system to champion. So, you know, as we have Donald Trump saying that we need to restore America, maybe, you know, all this time they've been talking about taking down the global economic system and it's all going to become digital currency and biometrics. Maybe this, instead of having some massive collapse, man, it's just going to be the robots just take everything. Then there is no money to take because nobody's got a job and nobody's making any money. And the government is just giving you money. They have control of everything. They can give it to you or they can take it away. Hey, nice and clean. And in the meantime, nobody's going to panic. We don't have any mass disruption because you know what? We still need the plebs. We got all this mad science gone mad happening right now. All these brain projects and nanobots in your blood that we need millions of guinea pigs to test it on before it's safe to use in the rich, powerful, and famous who are really going to be the ones who not only live forever but get off this rock. After America beat Russia in the Cold War, most of the world generally considered capitalism to be the hands-down best system on which to base economies and democracies. And for decades, few doubted capitalism's merit, which was made stronger by thriving globalization and skyrocketing net worth. Yeah, and how interesting, because thriving globalization is about what is about ready to kick the legs out from underneath the can. And in 1989, when the Berlin Wall fell, I remember that, the world had only 198 billionaires. And now, according to Forbes, in 2016, we have 1,826 of them. So that's an increase of 1,600-plus billionaires in just 20-some-odd years, 25, 4, 3 years. Despite growing riches when the banks collapsed in 2007 during the Great Recession, the world stepped back and wondered aloud if a more nuanced approach to economic progress was needed. And those doubts of 21st century capitalism helped set the stage for an economic paradigm shift just starting to appear now. Economists observing jobs not just disappearing to other countries, but disappearing off the face of the earth. And the culprits, oh, robots and software. At first, the warnings of this weren't very loud. After all, economies and companies thriving because of modernization, which include upgrading with new technology to make and save money, yes, do more with less. And it was Microsoft pushing that and all the big companies. They're like, you know what? We had to let all these people go. And hey, even if the economy comes back, we're not hiring you because we found ways with technology to do your job. But in the last year, a growing chorus of people are now beginning to see a tipping point, maybe a decade into the future where tens of millions of jobs may be lost in as short as a 5-year period, which would be many, many more times jobs lost during the Great Recession. Already today, there are countries trying out driverless trucks to deliver goods. Truck driving is one of the most prevalent jobs in America with about 3.5 million drivers. What will we do in 5 years when they are all replaced with vehicles that don't need human intervention to get on and get off a highway to deliver goods? And of course, they are just one occupation amongst dozens, like waiters, bank tellers, even librarians, that might no longer require humans in the very near future. Capitalism says that this is the nature of the competitive economy. However, those jobs that are replaced will never be regained, and the truck drivers and waiters will not easily find other jobs. Some will likely need to be provided for by the state. Otherwise, grown men and women will surely pick up Molotov cocktails. Ding, ding! That is why they want to give us all money, people. They don't want to rock the boat yet. Yes, because some men and women will surely pick up Molotov cocktails and show the world a thing or two about worker revolutions. So let's just give them all money and a robot. Tell them it's all going to be okay. The only difference between this and other historical revolutions is that they won't be alone. This time, it's not a problem of rich versus poor. In 20 years, everybody's job will be at stake, even that of my wife, who trained 19 years in college to become what? Oh, a little too much information in OBGYN. And still today, so what? We're going to have, like, robot OBs? Ha ha. And still today, or maybe we won't even need OBGYNs, because guess what? Reproduction will be done via license only and in a petri dish. And still today has $100,000 in school debt. Yeah, after 19 years of college. That's insane. But machines will deliver babies and remove cervical cancers better than people. And software will do taxes more efficiently than accountants. And articles will be crafted better by news aggregating software than living, breathing journalists. Everyone, including even the U.S. president, is at risk of being outperformed by a machine and eventually being jobless and without an income, right? Because people are imperfect and make mistakes. So now that we know that we're all going to lose our jobs, what system can make it so humans can still be happy and live better without employment? Well, clearly, it is not capitalism. Whichever system we choose, we will have to incorporate an improving standard of life for people in society. And for this reason, I, not me, this is Zoltan Isfahan, I tend to support universal basic income as one way to desire robots to take our jobs, but not leave the world poor. However, that does not really say what will happen to our economies after the robot revolution is really underway. And some people have said that a fully automated luxury communism will prevail once robots take all the jobs. A fully automated luxury communism. That's the first time I've ever heard that one, but a good description. Thank you, Zoltan. Will prevail once robots take all the jobs. An economic system that favors technology pampering humans all day long. Yes, sex bots, robot massages, and feeding you grapes. Communism is a historically loaded word that few people like, including myself, who is a longtime entrepreneur. And additionally, it insinuates being chained to a community and social service, something I think our individualistic minds, minded world may scoff at. What? Being helpful to each other? The 21st century has made people feel more entitled than ever. Yeah, we talked about that. Everybody thinks they should step out of high school and be a CEO and a millionaire and have a Porsche and not have to do anything. And frankly, with so much amazing innovation humans have come up with, we deserve to be entitled. I don't know about that. We deserve to be pampered by technology, yes. And we deserve to never, ever work a day in our lives again if we don't want to. We deserve not to be bothered by government or society if we're not bothering others. No, just make sure you take your little robot pill, Jenny. We can monitor you, and then you can do whatever you want within reason till we push that button and you start having subversive ideas. Don't do it. Don't do it. And we deserve to pursue lofty dreams instead of struggling to earn a handful of dollars. I mean, yeah, it just sounds so wonderful. In fact, I, Zoltan, doubt money will even survive this century. If anything, in the future, only knowledge has tradable value, and the knowledge to create better machines, software, and experiences from technology. And around this time, surely before 2075, the singularity will be possible at a point where people connect themselves to artificial intelligence and essentially disappear into a sea of growing and organizing information. Then it is anyone's guess what happens to this world. Yeah. Like I said, being able to upload and download yourselves with the hive mind, good old Ray Kurzweil's fantasy becoming reality. However, back to reality here in 2016, whatever economic system does prevail in the next 25 years, it will not be anything we thought of before. Karl Marx and Adam Smith simply did not account for what indefinite robot labor would mean to a new world, increasingly reliant on microprocessors and ones and zeros for its every step. Whatever happens, it is probably best to keep an open mind about the future and the new economic models. Yeah, keep an open mind. No, thank you. I am going to be kicking and screaming and ripping the drapes down as you try to drag me through that door, because I am not going. Many of us are running on a financial treadmill right now, trying to get ahead and realize that the American dreams of riches and good life, but in the future, the American dream may be more about discovery of our newly acquired transhumanist possibilities and enjoying technology that has made our modern lives so simple and easy. And Zoltan thinks that he absolutely can get used to that. They're trying to sell it. And you know what? There's no stopping that robot machine now. Oh, no, because they're making the last of all the capitalist dollars. They're farming it all out. They're building factories for not only robots but clones. Yes, in China, they got a clone factory. You and me are just going to be paid to sit around and look pretty. Yeah, that isn't how it's going to work out. We need 100 more guinea pigs to try our cancer cures. Oh, yes, look. These tiny robots swimming in your blood are going to save your life. Researchers have tricked cancer cells into eating balls full of poison, killing the cells and effectively treating breast cancer in a bunch of mice, says a new report in the Journal of Nature, published on March 14, 2016. These little miracle balls are called what? Oh, nanoparticles. And they could be the key to finding, diagnosing, and treating a number of illnesses in the future, once we figure out exactly how to make them do their jobs. And that's where you and I come in. Yes, we are going to be the ones that are utilized in the lab, since they're not using lab animals anymore. Right? We found out they were getting rid of a lot of those lab animals. No, because we got humans and we got bodies on a chip. They're going to use us to figure out how to use these little nanoparticles and the little nanobots, load up their payload and target specific cells as they're splicing and dicing with CRISPR and making genetic modifications before they do any of this stuff on themselves. So, all right, let's think of nanoparticles as little delivery trucks. Yeah, let's dumb this down. So dumb that any dumb American who doesn't quite get it yet will open their arms to this technology. So these little nanoparticle delivery trucks, look how cute they are. They can be loaded with almost anything from a medical lab, a medicine, fluorescent agent, or in this case, some poison. But these delivery trucks are tiny. Actually, tiny isn't the right word. The screws on your glasses are tiny. The pebbles that get stuck in your shoes are tiny, Mr. Dumb American. A grain of sand, the poster child of tiny, is still 5,000 times bigger than the largest nanoparticle. That's tiny. Nanoparticles are small enough to breach the blood-brain barrier, ding, 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 which is a blockade in your head to keep the bacteria and other cellular refuse from entering your brain. If you can move drugs through the blood-brain barrier, Ding, ding. You can treat a new host of diseases. Yes. And you can get the nanobots to connect your brain to the internet. You see where this is all going. But hey, it'll cure your cancer, Johnny. So make sure you line up for your nanobots, your nanotechnology full of poison. Nanomaterials help the delivery of a drug. Tom Webster, president of the U.S. Society for Biomaterials and the chair of the Chemical Engineering Department at Northeastern University's College of Engineering, explained in a phone interview. If a pharmaceutical company has developed a drug to treat cancer, what we have done in the nanomaterial community is develop carriers for that drug so it can target a specific cell and release that drug to the cell. Nanomedicines are already pushing forward, but they aren't yet that great. Like the poison ball study showed, only a 50% success rate is not enough to say this was a definite win, and that ratio is on the high end of the spectrum. There are two major tasks, and others in this field want to achieve, and this is to achieve a high rate of success using nanomedicines to kill viruses and turning them into sensors that can go inside your body. Yes, we talked about that as well. Imagine not putting the Fitbit on your arm, but putting the Fitbit in your blood. Hey, look it. We postulated that, and oh, look it. Now they're actually talking about it. A nanoparticle sensor would be just like a Fitbit that goes into your bloodstream, recognizes where the diseases are, communicates those findings with your iPhone, and then treats the disease. And if that happens, nanoparticle sensors could mean Western medicine stops being reactive and instead starts becoming predictive. And everything is going to become predictive because once they're in your body, and we're talking about biosensors in your bloodstream and in your cells, there is nothing they won't know. They'll be able to tap into neurons and get your thoughts and see your dreams, read what you ate, see how your cells are working. I mean, do you guys not see this? I know you guys see this, but not everybody sees this. This is not a good thing. We are being sucked into the machine, and it is happening faster than you know. We cannot let this happen to our children. It just cannot. Anyway, using nanoparticles to kill, it may only take a couple years. And make sure you stick around, guys, because we have Ms. Lonnie Clark live up next. It is Monday, so there's all kinds of great radio on Monday. Brand new. Lots of stuff tonight. Brandon, Al Mazda News, really good corporate report. Tim Kelly. All right, guys, have an awesome Monday. I'll catch up with you tomorrow.